The Guardian. Hi, this is Greya, and welcome to Science Weekly and to the second episode of our special documentary series about noise pollution under the sea, Oceans of Noise. If you missed episode one, just skip back in the Science Weekly feed. In this episode, sound recordist Chris Watson is on a Norwegian fjord, listening out for the telltale burp of a mating cod. Bit weird, isn't it? Burping and having sex. I think I'll let Chris take over now.
After our last experience in that fjord, when we were out in that small boat, I vowed any time I worked with you on a boat again, it would have to have three funnels and a ballroom. The good thing about this is we don't have to steer it. And it's got somewhere to stay dry
and
get out of this Norwegian rain. Today I'm in Norway, just south of Bergen, in an archipelago of fractured islands which make up the coastline. And I've been joined by my very good friend and fellow sound recordist, Jana Vinderen. And Jana and I are about to get on board a research vessel from the Institute of Marine Research in Bergen, which, Jana, you're Norwegian, so tell me what it's called.
Yes, it's called Hans Brattström.
And it's equipped with some really quite sophisticated sound monitoring and recording technology, isn't it?
Yes, this is to be able to listen to which direction the sound is coming from.
I understand because cod are spawning at this time of year, so the eggs and the milk, the sperm, are being released into the water at the same time to fertilise the eggs. And the whole reason for coming out to Norway at this time of year, I mean, it's March, this is a key period for when cod spawn, and during that period, I understand, I mean, from some of our conversations, that the fish are actually quite vocal at this time.
Yes, they are. And also, you know, there's the thought or the hypothesis that they are actually quite choosy in who they are mating with. And, you know, they have this beautiful sort of dance when they spiraling up towards the surface and they make this rumbling sound as they do it. I remember some 12 years ago we were recording that together, you know, this kind of low frequency rumbling. And this is also then a question whether seismic testing will interrupt with that spiraling and the sound that they make, that they will come out of sync, the two fishes, as they are spawning.
Yeah, let's get on board.
Great.
Come in.
Thanks.
You don't want to hang out in the rain,
you know?
Usually, I would never ride in
southwest
of Norway.
Okay, so engines powered up. We're pulling away from the quayside and out to sea around these myriad islands on the west coast of Norway. It's this fractured coastal landscape. Norway's income has benefited greatly from its oil and gas industry in recent decades. Since the discovery of one of the world's largest offshore oil fields in Norwegian waters in 1969, the country has seen an enormous income from shipping petroleum all around the world. And the hunt for new resources has often relied on setting off huge seismic explosions underwater. But Norway's also the world's second largest exporter of seafood. So fish such as cod and herring, which live in its waters, are vital to its economic future as well. And this is partly what this research trip is all about, to investigate the impact of the noise oil, gas exploration and shipping generate on fish stocks. We're on the bridge of the ship, headed out actually to something of a swell, and the islands are starting to break up. There's becoming more stretches of open water, and the clouds just lifted over to the west. I've seen some of the snow-capped mountains looking inland into Norway. But anyway, Nils has called us downstairs for a meeting. just what we're going to be doing.
Hi. I'm Chris.
Yeah,
I'm Nils Olav Handegard. I'm the cruise leader for this voyage. I work mainly with acoustics.
I'm Erlen. I work at the Institute of Marine Research.
I'm Karen de Jong. I work at the Institute of Marine Research as well. And I work with the effects of human noise on the fish, and then especially reproduction and communication.
Hi, I'm Purnima Ratilal Makris from Northeastern University. We work on investigating imaging technology for the ocean, looking at acoustics to study the ecosystem.
Hi, my name is Saigita Siri. I'm a graduate student from Northeastern University. I work with Professor Purnima Ratilal.
My name is Helge Jorgensen. I'm a deckhand engineer and doing the most on board.
And is it around there that the cod have been spawning?
Yes.
The area we are in is the Austevoll Islands. That's where we most likely will find spawning sounds during the afternoon.
Let's go outside, back on deck. I think I need to get some fresh air. This isn't my first trip out recording in a boat with the renowned Norwegian sound artist Jarne Vinderen. We've spent many cold hours on fjords and in harbours listening to what's below the surface. And one of the reasons why I enjoy working with Jarne is that we both believe that recording and then sharing sounds of the underwater world has an important role in informing and protecting aquatic environments.
Very early on, I was really concerned with how we are treating the planet. I grew up by a lake in Norway, and I got very concerned with how we were treating this lake. And then later on, all summers I've been spending by the sea with my grandfather particularly, and he taught me a lot. My grandfather was an ear, nose and throat specialist, so I learned early on about, for example, bone conduction.
Because that's how I understand how a lot of sea mammals do hear, through bone conduction, through that direct contact. So after this experience, I can understand how you had an interest in sound through your grandfather's work, but what got you actually into sound recording?
After I had stopped studying science, I did visual art, and it kind of didn't make sense to make objects. So I got interested in working with immaterial material, like sound.
What drew you back towards the water?
I had for a while worked with sensors and interactive sound installations. And through this, I came across the contact microphone and used them as triggers. And then realizing how hydrophones work. And I remember very well when we were out together, and you had one and I had one, and we put it inside of this ant's nest, which was, you know, it was a great experience. And we went out to the beach and dug them into the sand, you know. And this really opened up a lot for me of the experiment, how I can experiment with these kind of contact, large contact microphones. And then that brought me back to the sea and what I really, really love and feel very much at home. Everywhere there's just some sea, I feel at home.
That's really interesting, that, because I remember those times where they were really perfect moments of discovery. I mean, I know people have been using contact microphones and hydrophones for decades, but that's what I love about how we work with sound. I mean, and sometimes together, because usually it's a very solitary experience, but that moment of just discovering a different world, a world of vibrations rather than changing air pressure, and then being able to translate that into sounds, into the sea and to the oceans was really thrilling for me, you know, as well, because discovering that actually it's not a silent world out there, it's incredibly sound rich. How do you then go on to share your work with a larger audience?
Yes, it's been important for me that I'm actually traveling to the places to experience it so that I can tell the story. It doesn't kind of make sense to me to pull some sounds off the internet or like this. It's a whole experience of being at that place, talking to local people and collecting information and meeting other people that are enthusiastic about this place or telling me about issues. So then I will create, depending on the project, sometimes installations, and then I use, can be like, you know, 80 speaker installation in which one I did together with Tony Myatt in the Park Avenue Tunnel in Manhattan, which is was an underwater sound environment that you walked through, or a smaller gallery situation where you might have sort of 16 speakers set up around the audience. I like that people could be inside of the audio environment. I'm creating an immersive situation as we are in right now. You know, we are immersed in sound anywhere we are. You know, it might be really, really delicate small sounds that you have to concentrate to listen to, but they are all around us.
You now, you're in a very respected position because you work directly with some really cutting-edge scientists who are looking at sounds and noise pollution in the oceans. And how do you go about accurately representing scientific work and presenting it in an artistic context?
Yes. Since early on, when I was recording fish, I was consulting with scientists to learn more. I mean, it's really to collect information. Then I learned about how fish are producing sound by seeing it, by talking to the scientists. And sometimes, you know, hypotheses are coming up or I'm suggesting something, and I always will check with a scientist, you know, is there grounds to say this? You know, can I say this? So, of course, the way to translate this to an audience, I will not present it as a paper, for example, you know, but I read a lot of papers to learn about the subjects that I'm interested in talking about or making a sound piece about. But of course, it's very clear I'm not using a scientific method. It's a very different technique. I suggest more hoping to raise questions, hoping to raise awareness and respect. And it's easier to say that I try to raise empathy, but empathy is not really quite the right word. I really like us to raise curiosity. As you have as a child, you know, you question and you're curious, you're open-minded. I'm hoping to raise this in people.
Sure where we are at the moment, but we're in quite a heavy swell and I'm hanging onto a ladder on the stern of the boat. I feel much more comfortable outside than inside when I can see the horizon. But Karen, I'm interested to hear about an aspect of your works, studying the cod spawning and their movements associated with that. Can you tell me something about it?
Yes, we look at the effect of seismic on cod. And we mainly look at reproduction, so how successful cod is in spawning eggs. And there's a few steps the cod needs to actually successfully spawn. First of all, it needs to find the spawning grounds. Then it needs to actually find mates.
And we're sort of on the edge of the North Sea here, aren't we? We've come quite a way out, I can tell that, because of the swell and the action of the waves. So there must be something here that's particularly attractive to the cod in this section between the islands.
Yes, and we don't actually know what that is, really. But we know there's cod here because of the local knowledge of the fishermen. So cod produce sounds, and it's mainly the males that produce sounds. And that's likely both to attract females and to convince females to spawn with this particular male. So some males sound better than other males. And females will choose between these different males and see which one she likes best, which one sounds best.
I say that's interesting. So the quality of the sound that the males are producing, the females will make their sexual selection based on the quality or the type of particular sound that individual males make.
Yeah.
So with sound making such an important contribution to sort of sexual selection of the females to the males, particularly during the spawning process, what noise can interrupt those sounds, and how significant can that be?
So there's a lot of different noises we humans make. For example, you have boat noises and seismic, and we're right now looking at the effects of seismic because it's such a loud sound.
Just explain what kind of seismic sounds you're talking about.
So this is the sound oil companies use to investigate seafloor and see where the oil could be. And it's also used in research to actually look at what the seafloor looks like. And these are blasts by air guns that produce a very low frequency, very loud boom that you can hear over many kilometers. And this could both stress the fish and it could kind of hide their conversations, basically. So it could hide for the female which male sounds best, and it could also hide it completely so that they won't actually be able to find the males anymore. It's, yeah, and that's what we are testing at the moment.
You're also looking at, you know, the shipping noise.
Yeah, of course, there will also be shipping noise involved. And the difference between the seismic blast and the shipping noise is that the shipping noise is continuous. And it's a lot less loud, so it affects a lot less of the area. But on the other end, it's continuous, and therefore they may not be able to call in the quiet times. Because in between the blast, there's still 10 seconds where they could call uninterrupted.
I think at the moment we can well understand the effects of shipping noise, because we've suddenly accelerated on this ship moving to another spot, and just on the surface the sound, as everybody will be able to hear now, is very loud, and that sound can only be worse below the surface because of the way sound travels through the ocean.
Yes. Yeah.
What do you think we're doing now? Are we going somewhere?
So now we're going back to breakfast as well.
That's the more sheltered bit.
That's the more sheltered bit.
Thank God for that. Looking at a computer screen with peaks and troughs, coloured peaks and troughs on it, but that's about all I can discern. Can you tell me what actually we're looking at?
I'm Nils Olav Handegard, work as a research scientist at the Institute of Marine Research in Bergen. You're basically looking at sound. You send out a sound pulse, it reflects off the bottom, and the strong reflections are seen as red colours. When fish gets under the vessel, you can see the marks on the screen. You can see the mark in the middle there.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's probably a cod, since we're in the middle of the spawning aggregation now. So at this time of the year, they aggregate here, but usually they are more migrating. Depends on the stock as well.
You also have the different populations. You have the coastal cod that lives more around here, and then you have the skrei, and that's the kind of North Atlantic cod. So now we're looking at the spectrogram of the sounds the cod make, and this is a typical grunt where you see a dominant frequency and then a few of harmonics. I can play it, but it's too low for the speakers of my computer.
The grunts you hear now were recorded by Steve Simpson's team from the University of Exeter. This is cod grunting in the northeast Arctic Ocean. And now from the West Atlantic. Back on the boat, the sounds of cod recorded through Karen's hydrophones is just too quiet to be heard above the noise on deck. However, I can tell you that it sounds rather like a human burp, but much, much quieter. And in any case, Karen does a really good impression.
Room! Room!
Actually, what interests me about all that, it sounds about, you know, it sounds funny, it's a very simple sound, but there's a lot of information there.
Yes, it's a sound that consists of several pulses. And how fast they can do these pulses can be related to their condition. especially in the last part of the sound where they probably get tired. In gobies, at least, they've shown that males that get less tired, so can do faster pulses in the end of the sound, are more preferred by females.
I guess one of the potential problems is that low-frequency sound conflicts with a lot of man-made generated noise in the oceans because it's of a low frequency, similar to the sound of this ship at the moment.
Yeah, and they've shown that in some species the sexual selection breaks down. Fish don't realize if it's the right species or not, if there's too much noise to actually hear the signal well enough.
After a day watching the scientists on board the Hans Brattström, Jana and I were craving the opportunity to get away from its engines, drop our own hydrophones into the water and listen through our headphones. So we headed back to the pier, which stretched out into deep, clear water, in the hope we might hear the sounds of spawning cod as evening approached.
Captain, thank you. Thank Safe you. Passage.
A pleasure to have you with us.
Okay, nice to meet you. Thanks for coming.
Well, wave goodbye to the boat, Jana. They've dropped us off. And they're back out to continue their acoustic surveying. Like I say, I'm not actually disappointed to get back onto dry land. I mean, it was okay. It wasn't that rough, apart from when we went around the outer edge of the island and I began to become less interested in what we were doing and more interested in keeping the contents of my stomach inside. But I was just blown away by the level of expertise, the equipment, the sort of dedication and experience of those, that international group of scientists. It's really quite exhilarating just to tap into that level of skill and opportunity and work. I mean, and to see the potential.
Yeah, it's really exciting and definitely new thoughts and running in my head at moments.
Yeah.
And new experiences that they have that I think just haven't quite thought about.
What I enjoy about working with the scientific community like that, and what we can do as artists, is articulate something of their understanding and the way that they produce their work in terms of the public understanding of the vast array of research and knowledge that's on board that boat, and presenting it in a way that makes it entertaining and engaging to experience, as well as conveying a significant message.
I think also, the reason for doing it, we're coming from the same passion of the ocean and the underwater environments.
The other thing, Jana, that I'm really keen to do now is fired me up to go and do some recording. So I'm really keen that we get our hydrophones in now that boat's gone and it's much calmer and quieter, and have a listen for ourselves.
It's a good place.
What was it?
Was it
in Sweden? In the forest.
What were we doing there?
That course,
Oh, yeah. Now, may I have two floats, please?
Listening with my hydrophones off this jetty and the harbour can at first be quite a confusing and disorienting experience. Looking down into this crystal clear water, there's hardly anything moving, and yet there's this confusing array of squeaks, bumps, bangs and rustles. Here, occasionally, are the low grunting sounds of a single cod. And these remarkable explosive bangs, which Karen later described to me, are probably the sounds of corkwing wrasse, a fish that has a symbiotic relationship with the cod by cleaning the cod from the infestations of sea lice. This is a strange and alien sounding world, one that we can look into from the surface. But underneath, the hydrophones reveal this remarkable acoustic world. Yana, when we were out on the boat with the people from the Institute of Marine Research, I remember a couple of the scientists told us that the most active time for the cod to vocalise when they were spawning was around about sunset.
Yeah, and then you can really start to listen, and the fish is also really quite active then, eating, making rumble sounds. Then the contrast is really much louder, so to say. When you focus your listening, you really start to hear more. Then a whole new world opens up under there.
Oh, we're on the ferry back to the mainland, Yana, skimming the surface of what we've been recording under. And it's flat calm today, isn't it? It's typical when we're going back, because it looks like a really good recording potentially. Yeah, can't wait to get back. Particularly what we heard about the cod spawning and the sounds that they produce when they're spiralling up in that circle. I mean, the prospect of recording that, it would be fantastic.
Yeah. How the female is actually choosing a male according to the sound, and how they're going to use the sound as they are spiralling up towards the surface, and how human-created sounds are interacting with this process.
That was one thing that the scientists articulated really well. That's a vital part in the reproduction of cod. And if that moment, that process, that event is disturbed, then catastrophic results, bearing in mind it takes years for these fish to develop and reach maturity. And given the importance of fish and fish stocks, particularly with a seafaring nation like Norway, which I guess is one of the reasons why so much cutting-edge research has been done, it's very clear to me the devastating impact of man-made noise on disturbing that event. And getting access to the science and the information that the people from the Institute of Marine Research have told us about is a real privilege.
And you do become aware how much our actions on land is transmitting into the water. So you become aware of how much presence human beings have underwater without knowing it.
My trip to Norway really illustrated to me the effort going in to understand the importance of sound in underwater habitats. And they're just one of the many teams of scientists doing work like this all around the world. And that's where we'll pick up in episode 3, examining the efforts being made to use this growing body of scientific research to prevent damage to these fragile, unseen worlds.
The next and final episode of Oceans of Noise is available in your Science Weekly podcast feed right now. The series is presented by Chris Watson and produced by David Waters. The executive producers are Catherine Godfrey and Shanida Scotland, with sound engineering by Pascal Wise. The commissioning editor is Tracy McVeigh. And thank you to all the scientists and artists that helped us to make the series. The podcasts are part of the Guardian Seascape project, examining the health of the seas and the impact of fishing and pollution on our vast oceans. You can find more from that series by searching Seascape over at The Guardian.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.